Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 159, recorded July 14th, 2014. Tech Shop. Triangulation is brought to you by Smart Things, the easiest and most affordable way to create a smart home. Protect and control your home from anywhere with no contracts or monthly fees. For 10% off any home security kit, visit smartthings.com/twit and use the code TWIT10 at checkout. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we talk about some of the most interesting things going on in the world with some of the most interesting people. And we've got a great one this week. Jim Newton, he's the chairman and founder of something called Tech Shop. And he joins us from one of many tech shops. This one, the original tech shop in kind of the Silicon Valley area. Hi, Jim. Welcome.
Hey. How you doing?
Good to have you. What is Tech Shop? Thanks.
So Tech Shop is a membership-based workshop that lets members come in and use our tools and equipment to build pretty much anything they can think of.
And you did this because you needed this, probably, right? Scratch your own itch?
Yeah, I actually, it was kind of a selfish venture on my part. I wanted access to all these cool tools because I had a list of hundreds of things I wanted to make back in, 2005, 2006. But I knew that if I went out and bought all the equipment and set up a shop, paid the rent, paid for the utilities, guess what my job's going to be? I'm going to be a machinist and, right. Building prototypes and fabrication projects.
Suddenly you're doing other people's stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not why I wanted the tools. I just wanted the tools so I could goof around and make, stupid stuff. So I thought about, how to model the business in a different way. And I thought about, kind of the health club, the gym membership model. And thought, would that apply to a machine shop fabrication type workshop? And that's how it started.
Now, there are similar things like hacker spaces, maker spaces. How would you contrast this with, say, a maker space?
Yeah, I think, there's a whole spectrum of shops, like hacker spaces, maker spaces, fab labs, all the way up to, I think Tech Shop is just on the kind of slammed on the commercial, big scale kind of end of the spectrum. But we need all these spaces.
There's
so many people that want to make things. So we need everybody to participate in this whole spectrum. It's really powerful.
I would guess, though, because this is I love the model of a health club. It's a paid thing that you have probably a broader variety and higher quality equipment in the tech shops.
Yeah, well, one thing, all of our equipment that we buy for typical tech shops except what you see in the background here, because this is our first location. But in all of our other locations, we just go out and we buy all brand new equipment.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference right there. When we started Tech Shop, this one here, this is our first one, we went out and bought used equipment and, scrounged and begged whatever we could do to get equipment. And it's not scalable because if something breaks and you have to find a new motor for it or a new gear drive or something, the machine can be down for months.
Yeah. Yeah. This looks, I'm looking at this. This looks, does not look like your typical makerspace. It's it looks really nice and clean and tight. So this is a for-profit enterprise.
Yes, for-profit. Yeah. We actually organized as a nonprofit early on, and a couple of people that I was advising with that were helping me kind of figure it out in the early days, they said, are you sure you want to be out there with your hand out all the time trying to beg money to keep a nonprofit open? And so I'm really actually glad that we went the commercial route because we've been able to attract, investors and capital to expand. I don't know if we would have been able to really expand if we had gone the nonprofit route.
You've got I know President Obama was at your Pittsburgh location last month. So you've got locations all over.
Yeah, we have 8 locations. Let me see if I can recite them. San Francisco, here at Mid-Peninsula, San Jose, Detroit, Chandler, Arizona near Phoenix, Arlington, in D.C., that's our latest one. Austin, Texas, in Round Rock, and Pittsburgh. I think that's. I think I got all of them.
Yeah,
it's getting harder to recite the list. Expand.
And how much does it cost to set up and equip a location when you set up a new one?
It depends on the market, but it's typically $2.5 to $3.5 million.
Holy cow!
That's for architecture. That's to get into the space, do all the tenant improvements, the walls, HVAC, and all the stuff, and then the equipment's about $1 million just by itself.
What kind of equipment?
And then you've got, everything from milling machines and lathes, welders, sheet metal equipment, woodworking, electronics, laser cutters, sewing, automotive stuff, finishing stuff, sewing. 3D printers, 3D scanners, computers. I mean, just pretty much everything.
And when you talk about CNC milling or 3D printers, are you talking about the hobbyist grade stuff, or is it a little bit higher level?
Now we don't go for super high end stuff like $150,000 kind of mill centers, but we have a thing called a Tormach, which is a CNC mill. It's just like a
that's pretty serious. Like a,
yeah, it is. Yeah. It's not a little desktop thing. It's a serious thing.
That's cool. And what's neat about this is that you may be a woodworker, so you have all the woodworking stuff, but it's rare that you'd have all of the things in all of these areas. And it may be that the invention that you want to build requires a little bit of here, a little bit, there, and having all of that at your disposal. So tell me how much it costs to be a Tech Shop member. Is it like a health club membership?
It's just like a health club, except we don't do the initiation fee and all the kind of the BS that goes with some health clubs.
Yeah, because they want to lock you in and get your money up front.
It's $125 a month. Mm-hmm. $125 a month is kind of the base charge. You could come in, you could just buy a month and then work on your project take off.
Oh, I like
There's
that.
No term.
So you could go in and say, I've got a project, I'm just going to do this month, but you're not committed to month in, month out.
Right, yeah.
I like that. And how many people do you allow in? It looks pretty quiet right now in your tech shop. Of course, this is the middle of a weekday, so maybe less busy. But on a busy Saturday afternoon, how busy does it get?
Yeah, typically evenings and weekends are busiest. I kicked everyone out for the interview here, so
I guess we don't want.
They're all waiting outside to come back in. No, weekday mornings typically are not as busy. There's actually probably about 25 people here in other parts of the shop right now.
Goodness. Do you have a limit on the number of people who can become members?
Not yet. We haven't really hit that limit yet. San Francisco, the tech shop there has about almost 1,500 members, and it still seems to be working fine.
People sign up. I'm sure it's just like the exercise equipment at the gym. You say you can use this for 30 minutes. You sign up ahead of time if it's busy, and that way you make sure you kind of keep people moving through. Somebody just doesn't sit on the Tormach all day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of say, you can use it as much as you want. You can also reserve equipment so that you know it's going to be available when you get there. But we just tell people, look, you got to play nice. There's hundreds of other people using this shop. You got to clean up your mess. You got to keep the place nice. And you got to, be respectful of other people.
Da Vinci Wonder in our chat room wonders if you can bring a friend to help you if you can't do it yourself due to disability.
Yeah, you can buy a day pass. Depending on what kind of membership you buy, you get some guest passes that get thrown in. There's also, we have our employees here are called Dream Consultants, and they're always here on staff to help you with anything you might need. Check a setup on a machine before you actually start the go button, or carry material in, or anything like that you might need.
That's cool. So to overextend the health club membership, these are like your personal trainers who are there can work with you. Can you learn to do something? Will one of your consultants help somebody learn how to do something?
Yeah, they can help you with stuff, but we also have typically about 200 classes a month per location.
Oh, great.
On all the different equipment, other things like programming Arduinos and how to patent your invention and all kinds of things like that.
And I imagine you have, like a health club, you have family memberships too, because I think this is something that a parent and child would it'd be a great thing to do.
Yeah, certainly. Family memberships are very popular.
Yeah. So why did President Obama visit the tech shop last month in Pittsburgh? I must have been. Were you there for that?
I was. I got to meet him and kind of hang out with him. You know, we're buds now, I guess.
Yeah, me and the prez. Yeah. Did you have a beer?
Yeah. He's interested in, he's used the word maker in a lot of his speeches, including his inauguration speech. And, of course, advanced manufacturing and creating new jobs through entrepreneurship is really important to this administration. So he came to kind of highlight that he thinks that all the different cities across the country and all the mayors really should be focused on getting makerspaces in their communities. And,
I mean, that's really...
He used the word tech shop specifically for that, so that was good.
Wow.
Any makerspace will do.
That's so encouraging. You don't really expect our elected officials even to know about the maker movement, let alone kind of encourage it.
Yeah, I mean, but we're on the we're on the tip of this the face of this crest that's growing, this wave.
Yeah,
and it's a new industrial revolution. Chris Anderson's written about that. A lot of people have commented on how this really is a new, it's like, the Industrial Revolution or the internet wave that happened. This is going to change a lot of stuff.
Boy, that is really a great thing. And it feels a little bit like, for a while, I remember people like Jeremy Rifkin said, well, we're going into a post-industrial era. The United States will become a service economy. We won't make things anymore, and it seems to have been going in that direction. We'll offshore all the manufacturing. And I guess this isn't really this tech shop wouldn't be a place where you'd make 1,000 of anything, but it does seem like it's a home to innovation, to learning advanced skills, and to bringing some of this manufacture back home. What kind of – is it more artisanal, kind of boutique-y? Is it hobbyists? What kind of people do you have in there?
It's really all over the board. We have people come in that want to do, laser engrave some wedding glasses for their friend's wedding, custom thing. Mm-hmm. We've got, all the way up to, Square was made here. The little credit card.
It was made there?
Plug in your phone.
You're kidding.
That was designed at Tech Shop. That was developed at Tech Shop. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Great. Yeah. Yeah.
That's an example of that's a commercial product that's done quite well. We love it, and it's very interesting. So it was prototyped at the tech shop.
Yeah, the story is great. Jack Dorsey is the founder of Twitter, and he was the one that started Square. He went out and to all the VCs in Silicon Valley and got turned down because he just had a PowerPoint presentation and was waving his hands and talking about this thing called Square he wanted to make. Everybody turned him down. So he and his partner, Jim McKelvey, came to Tech Shop and actually developed the little prototype readers and got that all working with the app. Then they went back out and got an audience with a couple of the VCs again and actually showed them how it worked. And that actually led to them getting funded because the VCs could actually see how it worked.
Prototype makes a huge difference. On Kickstarter, too, now they require prototypes. So you've got an idea, having somewhere you can go and make the prototype is very cool. We're talking to Jim Newton. He is the founder and chairman of a commercial makerspace or hackerspace called Tech Shop at techshop.com. There are locations now in Austin, Chandler, Arizona, Washington, D.C. area, Detroit, the Silicon Valley, San Francisco, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's funny, Pittsburgh really seems to be a hotbed of that stuff. I don't know why. And Detroit, too. I love it because these are the old, big manufacturing cities that are reinventing themselves in this new light. And it's wonderful, post-industrial Pittsburgh, post-industrial Detroit, and on Mid-Peninsula, which is where Jim's coming to us from now. We'll have a lot more. In fact, I want to ask you about BattleBots because we used to run those BattleBot shows on Tech TV, and I think you were a BattleBotter.
I was, yeah.
Oh, cool. I want to ask you about that and more.
Yeah, I never got on camera, so I was never actually
built them.
I built them and, competeted. That was fun.
We'll talk about Mythbusters, too. Jim was the science consultant for Mythbusters. But in just a moment. But first, I want to talk about something that anybody who's a maker or just wants to kind of take control of their living space will want to know about. It's called SmartThings at smartthings.com/twit. It's really been a problem doing home automation because nothing talks to anything else. And, you know, you have an idea, but you can't do this with that. SmartThings really cuts through all of this. They've done such a great job by starting with the Smart Hub. This was actually a Kickstarter project that took off and is now a wonderful product. I'm going to tell you about the kits, the security kits you can get. In fact, we're going to give you 10% off in just a second. But this is the Hub. And what's cool about the Hub is it talks to so many different devices. You can use your SmartThings Hub. Let's see, I have the list here. I should just check it to make sure I get this right. You can use your SmartThings Hub to talk to your Nest thermostat, your Philips Hue. I have those great colored LEDs. Wemo's, the Belkin device. Your Sonos. Your GE automation. Your Schlage, you know, the locks. Honeywell and Eon. And imagine tying these all together with the SmartThings sensors and the SmartThings hubs and the SmartThings cameras. And then if this, then that. And suddenly you've got a really cool environment. And it all starts with the SmartThings Hub and the SmartThings Home Security Kit. Now, the basic kit is $329. You get a hub, you get a Smart Sense motion sensor, which is really cool. For instance, it'll turn on the lights outside when you see it sees motion, and the lights inside when you walk in the door. Anytime there's a motion, you also can get the. It comes with the SmartThings presence sensor. That's kind of cool. The presence sensor. You could put this on your keys so people would know when you walked in the door. It can help you find you where you left your keys, too. Or you could put it on your cat or your dog because it's small and it'll let you know where they are. You also get with this kit three multi-sensors. These are really, I think, one of the coolest things. They have accelerometers, thermometers, so you can tell when things open or close, when valuable items move, what the temperature is in a room or an area, if the garage door is open. And you get three of those, too. That's the home security kit, $329. But you can also get the smarter home security kit for a little bit more, $479. That adds another motion sensor, a smart power outlet, and, if you want to do security, a siren and strobe alarm for $479. For $599, the smartest home security kit includes everything I just mentioned, plus another presence sensor, a power outlet, and an outdoor light plug and control power outlet. And I'm telling you, you can mix and match. You can buy the parts and pieces individually, control it with iOS or Android. They're affordable. They're great ways to do home security, but and a whole lot more. Tie it into all your other devices, too. You could walk up to your door and have the Schlage lock unlock it for you. It says, ah, Leo, you're home. Let me turn on the lights. Let me start the Sonos music, calming music. I don't think they have a martini maker yet, but that I'm sure they're working on that. Somebody is. To get started creating your smart home, visit smartthings.com/twit. Save 10% off on the purchase of any of those home security kits by using the offer code TWIT10 at checkout. You also get free shipping within the United States. smartthings.com/twit and use a code TWIT10 at checkout. See, the maker movement's moving home. It's everywhere. smartthings.com/twit. We're talking to Jim Newton, who has done something kind of interesting, taken the maker movement, and I know, you know, it sounds negative, they commercialized it, but created a model that makes it possible, financially feasible, to have beautiful maker spaces with great equipment. It's all brand new equipment. Have trainers there who can teach you. They call them their dream coaches. It's called Tech Shop, and you can find out more about Tech Shop at techshop.com. And already the chat room saying, when are you going to open one in L.A.? When are you going to open one? Do you have plans to expand, Jim?
Yeah, we get literally hundreds of requests every week for, you know, people that want one in their community. So our goal is to open, you know, literally thousands of these across the U.S. and the world in the next, you know, 20, 25 years. We've announced a couple of new locations, and some I can't talk about yet. But we've announced that we're opening one in Munich, Germany next year with BMW as our partner. We're pretty excited about that. And we're opening one in Dublin, Ireland, I think later this year or early next year.
It makes sense two international that President Obama would support this, that governments would support this. It's good for the economy. It's good to get people trained, to give them skills, to give them tools. It really is as much an educational enterprise as it is, you know, just a support for the individual maker who wants to build something. I think this is so cool. What a great idea. CNC classes, laser cutter, arts and crafts, even sewing. You do software, too. I see you have Autodesk classes.
Yeah.
Of course, it all ties together. You need all of that. And right. If you go to techshop.com, you'll see there's all sorts of events going on. The Chandler one today, the Instructables Palette Contest. What is it? Building a palette? I don't know. Oh, what you can build with a palette. We all have these leftover palettes, right? These wood pieces of wood. Look, somebody's built a nice Adirondack chair and some furniture. I love that.
I'll have to put a picture up on the website. I built a paddle boat when I was about, I don't know, about 8 years old using a pallet. And I stuffed the pallet with bottles to
float it,
create the buoyancy. Put a bicycle frame on top, built a paddle wheel, hooked up the front forks to a sort of a rudder kind of thing. It sort of worked.
Now, so this is cool. So, and I think this is not unusual. You started young.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think if you talk to any maker that's doing a lot of stuff, the common thing is going to be that they took stuff apart when they were a kid.
Yeah.
And, not necessarily got the stuff back together and working, but yeah. They took stuff apart to see how things work. And that kind of set the mentality.
Did you have a parent that was kind of a maker in some form or fashion that encouraged this?
My parents are both pretty hardcore makers. My mom was an artist. She still is. My dad was a total tinkerer. He would build crazy stuff for people. He didn't even have a machine shop, but he would make these amazing machines without even a mill or a lathe or anything. He built a dune buggy when I was about 6 or 8 years old.
I see what the inspiration garage. Is here for the paddle boat. But yeah. I think there's an important lesson there, and it's why it's so great if parents go to places like Tech Shop with their kids, because this thing, I don't think it's necessarily in the genes, but it does get passed down, and your parents are role models for this, and if you want your kids to be doing this, doing it with them, it's also a great thing to do with your kids. I mean, it's so much fun. Kids love this. Tell me about BattleBots. So when did you get into making robots? Was that as a kid, or does that come later?
No, that was, I had a software company for about 12 years. And, you know, software is such that you don't get to actually touch the stuff that you're making.
Yeah.
It's kind of frustrating for a maker to be a software person. So when I got done with that company, that ended itself in the .com, Silicon Valley .com in about 2001. I started thinking about what I wanted to do to get back into, my roots, kind of making things with my hands. And so a couple of my friends were on a BattleBots team. So they said, hey, you want to come onto our team and build a BattleBot? And I said, yeah, sure. So we were just working in my garage. We didn't have any, mill or lathe or any real tools, just a welder and some hand tools. And it was fun. I built a 220-pound tracked robot and could never quite get it to work right because I didn't have all the tools.
Aha, you see the inspiration, scratching the itch. Gosh, I remember we used to air those BattleBots shows on Tech TV late night. They were usually reruns. They weren't the first run of the BattleBots. But some of those things, they had hammers. It would slam the other one. What was your secret power of your BattleBot?
It was just massive torque. I have a big army truck. So I was able to actually tow the big army truck with this BattleBot. So it had a lot of torque, and it had couple of big nasty spikes in the front. So the idea was to push people into the wall and basically smash them, just kind of crush them.
That was the fun thing about BattleBots is each one had its, if they were like the X-Men, each one had its own special skill, and it was almost a question, and they were not autonomous, they were remote control, but it was almost a question of, well, is it better to be massive with lots of torque or to have a hammer with a spike on it that goes boom? And it was always fun to watch those. That must have been a fun thing. But you didn't get into the competition? How did that, it never worked?
I never got onto the TV show.
Oh, okay.
No. There was something like 500 robots.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. I think it was the top 35 or 40 got actually onto the televised portion. So you had to go pretty high up to get on TV.
Our chat room wants to know what the software company you did was.
Gosh, it was called Laurel Systems. It was a 3D animation software development company.
Wow.
I bought a system. I bought a company in 1990 called Cubicomp and bought their product called Picture Maker. We redeveloped it, put it onto a windowing environment, Mac and Windows back then, and DEC Alpha. And there was like 22 different OSs back then, if you can believe it.
It was the 90s. Remember that. I do remember. It was crazy. Yeah.
And then we licensed RenderMan early on. So we had RenderMan in the product in the early 90s before anyone knew who Pixar was. Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah, really fun. You know what? If anything, you were just ahead of your time.
I don't know about that, but yeah, maybe.
You taught robotics at the College of San Mateo. That's fun. That we're building kind of BattleBot-styles robots with the kids there.
Yeah, they were 12-pound BattleBots. Basically, so it was essentially to let people get access to the machine shop up there. Uh-huh. And the reason I taught the class was so I could get access to the machine shop up there myself.
There's a thread in classes, all of this, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. The classes were from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Mondays and Wednesdays. And the reason that it was set up that way was so that nobody would kick us out at 10 o'clock when the school closed, so we could stay in there all night and work.
Brilliant. Working the system. Always got to work the system. What was your major in engineering in college? I mean, did you study?
No,
this?
My major was actually graphic design and illustration.
Of course.
Commercial illustration. And like many good entrepreneurs, I dropped out to start my own company in 1990.
In that field, or?
Yeah, I went into started the computer graphics company.
Oh, that was Laurel. Okay. Cool. Tell me how you got involved with the Mythbusters, because you were the science advisor for season 3 of the Mythbusters. That must have been a fun year.
It was a very fun year. Yeah, that was the most fun I've had in a long time. And I got to build all kinds of crazy stuff. So the way it started is I was teaching the BattleBots class up at the college, and I had kind of a whole bunch of bins with parts and equipment and tools and supplies in it, and I wanted to organize it. Well, if you know, you know on Mythbusters, Jamie's got that wall on the side of his shop where it's got all the tubs.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of out of naivete, I guess, I emailed him and asked him how his bin wall is organized, how it's set up. And he emailed me right back. And we got in this little email conversation about, you know, that. And so after he had explained it to me, I, you know, the little voice in my head is saying, you know, dude, you're talking to the guy in Mythbusters. See if you can get on the show to help him out, you know, build some crazy stuff. And so I emailed back and said, hey, if you need help, I live right here in the Bay Area. And I got this form letter back that he'd probably sent out 1,000 times before, you know, that we're not hiring. You know, if you want a career in television or motion pictures, consult your local library, blah, blah, blah.
And well, that's great advice.
At the time, I had a little server running a subscription-based website, and that was actually generating all my income at that time. Just this little server literally in the closet of my house with a couple of T1 lines. Because you could do that kind of stuff back then easily.
Yeah.
And so I didn't need a job. So I emailed him back and said, you know, I'd be willing to work for free. And he said, oh, that's different.
That got their attention.
You know, put me in touch with the producer of the show, and one thing led to the other, and I got on the show.
What fun. What kinds of things did you work on?
My most famous thing that I got to design was the first death ray. None of the death rays really worked for various reasons, but I think mine would have worked if the platform had been more stable. If you look at that first episode when we lift it up with the great all, the big forklift thing, you can see the base just flexing and twisting and mirrors are breaking off. It's hard to build a 40-foot by 40-foot mirror that's, you know, rigid. It's a lot harder than it sounds.
This is the Archimedes' death ray that he built to destroy the Roman fleet, right?
Right.
Mirrors and sunlight.
Yeah.
My
favorite line from that was when Jamie's out standing by the boat. This we built a fake boat and put it in the water, and he's standing in the ray, and he says, "I'm still alive.
It hasn't killed me yet." That is so funny. I think there is video of this. on the Discovery Channel of the Archimedes death ray, the first Archimedes death ray, if you want to check it out. That is a fun job. And I have to commend them because Jamie and Adam and Grant and the gang have all really done a lot, I think, to encourage the maker movement. You might say scientific inquiry. I'm not sure I'd say that, but I think certainly the idea of, well, let's just build it and see what happens. That kind of spirit is what the maker movement's all about.
Yeah, it's not about theoretical stuff. It's about, well, let's try it. Let's do the experiment.
There it is.
Yeah, there you go. So that was a little trimarine that we built, a little fake boat.
Is that Jamie running out there in the suit?
Yeah.
I'm not dead yet.
And then we had the... we had the mirror up on the dock.
Fell down.
Yeah, it was great.
Now,
and afterwards, this footage was not in the show, but afterwards we were so desperate. There's the mirror behind him there. We were so desperate to catch the thing on fire that we kind of went into pyro mode and started throwing Molotov cocktails at the boat.
Probably something like Archimedes also.
Yeah, probably so. It was just research, of course.
That's really the key, is the sense of play.
In it, and I'm not dead yet. I mean, from a purely...
The sense of play, the sense of fun, it really communicates, and it makes people say, gee, that instead of hard work, which it is, that looks like fun. That's like something I would like to do. So I think
it was hard work. You know, done at the end of the day, you know, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day. You get the end of the day, your brain's, you know, really fried because you've been thinking about stuff so hard and really trying to work out problems. It was very taxing.
Yeah.
That part really surprised me a lot.
I know that you've talked about the idea that innovation needs to become kind of a natural process. That's something that I think humans do this, but I think maybe we get shut down as we grow up and we figure, well, it's all been invented. We don't have to invent anything new. And to kind of bring that spirit back, it seems like a great thing.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of good models for that if you think about it, right? One is the health club, the health craze, right?
Yeah.
25, 30 years ago, there were no health clubs around. You didn't go join a gym and work out and get toned and get in shape. But now you do, and no one thinks anything about it. It's like this normal thing. And there's another one. You remember back in the mid-80s when desktop publishing started out, right? If you were a desktop publisher, that was your title. You said, oh, I'm a desktop publisher.
Right.
And you would go to conferences about desktop publishing, and you would read magazines about desktop publishing. And it was like a weird thing to be engaged in that. Now,
we're all
I don't remember seeing any conferences lately about desktop publishing, you know?
My friend Tom Santos bought a Macintosh, probably like a Mac Plus, and the first Apple LaserWriter, and got a van that he drove around in as a mobile desktop publisher. It's exactly as you said. This was a special, unique thing. And he would drive around at restaurants or wherever they need menus, and here I am, your mobile desktop publisher.
So the analogy to that is now you see people building makerspace trailers, and because it's this special thing, they put a bus, they put a bunch of maker tools in a bus. Well, so that's really awesome, right? It's really great to get people engaged, get them excited about being makers. But my hope is that in 20 or 25 years from now, it's going to seem silly that we were doing this because everybody is just engaged in making stuff and it's not a big deal.
I love that idea. You know, I think we had a downward turn, and probably all of these crazes were created, the health club craze, created by the... You know, we all got out of shape, so we had to respond to that. We had a downward turn. You know, there used to be shade tree mechanics everywhere, woodworkers, you know, dad be making stuff in the garage, that kind of thing. But then cars got so complicated, you couldn't be a shade tree mechanic anymore. You have to work on old cars because new cars, it's all computers. And I think it got so sophisticated that we started to get out of touch with how things are made, how things are invented and created. And we didn't get to touch the stuff anymore. And that's, you know... this is a response to that. Let's get our hands dirty. I like that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on the mark.
Yeah.
Dale Doherty from Love Make him. Says, you know, he didn't call his magazine Buy, you know, B-U-Y, but that's that's become the trend. Just like you said, the last 20 years or so, it's become, instead of make something or instead of fix something, let's just go buy one.
Have you gotten some heat from the maker movement about being a commercial enterprise in this space?
It's funny. Some, you know, Dale, speaking of Dale, he did a survey about a year ago. He found out that 70% of makerspaces in the U.S. are nonprofit, which is really interesting, right? So I think there's a kind of a prevailing kind of mindset that makerspaces need to be nonprofit, need to be open source and all that, which is, it's great for some people's models. That's perfect. But our goal really is to reach as many people as we possibly can. And, you know, we're using the commercial model to do that.
I think, you know, initially you might think of a maker movement as kind of a counterculture movement and, you know, beyond commerce. But I think if you actually start doing it, you quickly realize you need a model of some sort. And you can't just have people coming in and banging on stuff, making a mess and leaving. And I think the health club model is such a great model. This makes so much sense. And clearly you're doing well enough. You're profitable.
All of our stores that have been open more than a year are profitable, which is, you know, means the model's working.
Excellent.
And we're always coming up with new products and new product lines to make it even better.
Are they franchises or are they all owned, company owned?
No, they're all company owned.
Okay.
We did a couple of franchise kind of things and they didn't work out. So yeah. We're focused on the company owned model.
We're talking to Jim Newton. He's the founder of Tech Shop. They have a great program for veterans I'll tell you about in a second, and we'll talk a little bit more on triangulation. First, though, a word. The do-it-yourself movement can extend to many things, including loans. Yeah, Prosper.com is a Silicon Valley's answer to the big bank going in there put on a suit and tie and hat in hand and saying, please, sir, may I have some money? What if you could get $35,000 in the next 72 hours? What would you do with that? Pay off high rate credit cards, or maybe you'd start your own business like a tech shop. Maybe it'd be the kind of seed money you'd need to get your brilliant idea off the ground. Well, you can. It's simple at prosper.com/twit. You pay off your high rate credit cards, start a business, as much as $35,000 in 72 hours. The application is easy. Just go to prosper.com/twit. You fill out a very simple form. And you'll get your rate online almost instantly without affecting your credit score. These are low fixed rates. They're unsecured personal loans. You do not have to have collateral. Multi-year terms are available. These are really competitive loans because Prosper is bringing together people with money to lend with those of you who want to borrow. No outrageous fees. Interest rates don't go up. You'll never set foot in a bank. This is working so well, more than 2 million members and over $1 billion in funded loans. So go to prosper.com/twit and check your rate without affecting your credit score. And by the way, when you do get a loan, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Visa prepaid card. This is a thank you. But you have to go to prosper.com/twit. That's a special page just for our viewers to be eligible for the $50 Visa prepaid card from prosper.com. What a great idea. Silicon Valley is innovating all the time, and what really seems to happen is it takes outmoded or not working systems and just makes them better. Friction-free, easy. Prosper.com/twit. Jim Newton, our guest, the founder and chairman of Tech Shop. Now Tech Shop is around the country, soon to be around the world. Kind of the health club model, $125 a month or thereabouts. And you can get access to high-quality equipment and training, classes, software, and hardware. And I love this. Thanks to a partnership with the Veterans Administration and General Electric, you're offering veterans free one-year memberships and $350 in training. Go to all Tech Shop locations across the U.S. Did you just start doing this? This is a great idea. I love this.
We started it last year. We did 1,500 memberships last year, and we're doing, I believe it's 2,000 this year.
And it can be veterans of any era. And yep. If you're active duty military, you have discounts for them as well.
Yes.
I love that idea. And it really is about skills, isn't it? Getting some skills.
It is. You know, our servicemen and women have tremendous skills that they built up either before they went into the service or that they developed while they were in the service. And, you know, a lot of these people have to improvise on the spot. They have to come up with things to, you know, save lives and fulfill their missions. So for them to be able to come and take those skills, apply them to advanced manufacturing skills, maybe to get a new job or to start a business with that idea that they have, you know, we're thrilled to be able to give them access to this to do whatever they want to do with it.
That's so cool. Classes start with safety and basic use. You have pathway classes to get you to where you want to be with your project, your particular project, then an individual project classes as well. And you don't have to be a member to take classes, I gather.
That's correct. That's nice. Anybody can come in. We have couples come in, you know, on a date and learn how to weld.
That is a great date. I love that. What a great date. There is a page at techshop.com that shows you the core tools and equipment that all tech shops have. And I imagine different tech shops have additional features. But it is.
Yeah, they all have the same core equipment. Right. And then if we have, you know, if there's local things that people do in specific locations, then we'll add that too.
And, hey, if you've got the next square and you want to build a prototype, you don't say it can only be hobbyists. It could be somebody who's prototyping something, and you don't say, hey, well, we want a cut of whatever you do. It's they can do whatever they want. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we don't take a cut.
You got a plasma cutter, a torch mate, welders, handheld plasma cutters. If Archimedes had that. Routers, table saws, all the woodworking stuff, lathes and scroll saws and drill presses, all the sheet metal equipment, a 3D FDM printer, laser cutter, 3D scanner. This is so cool, and I think this is the right way. I think the right way to do it. I'm really thrilled that you're doing so well, and it's really a pleasure to talk to you, Jim Newton.
Thanks.
TechShop.com if you want to learn more. And or go there and say, open a tech shop near me. Coming soon to where you say Dublin and?
Dublin and Munich, Germany. Munich.
You want
and
to do?
We've got a couple in the U.S. that we'll be announcing pretty soon.
Right now, Mid-Peninsula, San Francisco Bay Area, San Francisco itself, San Jose itself, Detroit, Allen Park, Los Angeles, Austin, Round Rock, D.C., Arlington, Pittsburgh, P.A., and Chandler, Arizona. And soon, maybe to a location near you. Because I bet you there are a lot of people who would say, ooh, I want this. I want this. A lot cheaper than building your own million-dollar woodworking shop. Just join Tech Shop. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
Take care. Jim Newton, techshop.com. We do triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. If you want to join us live, I find it very valuable. I think you probably could tell. The chat room gives me questions, ideas, feedback, so I get a sense of what you want to know more about, and that's really helpful to me. We have so many great triangulations in the can now, 159 of them. You'll find them all at twit.tv/TRI or wherever you find podcasts. Just look for triangulation or look for Twit. Many apps like Stitcher. We have our own Twit apps. On every platform, thanks to our great independent developers, Xbox Store, iTunes, of course. But live is fun. If you can get here live, that's great. Twit.tv. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.